All right. Now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Father Trader.
Thank you. My name is Freeman, and I'm a dad. A grandfather and a great-grandfather. Anyway, my name is Freeman, and I'm an alcoholic. And I would like to welcome the newcomers here. I hope that you hear something that will bring you back. And if not, I hope you keep coming back and you will hear something. And I'd also like to thank my support from Bridge Street Drunks Only. That's my Visalia home group. Actually, it's from Monday through Sunday, 7 a.m. It's like a long home group. And then in Sonoma County, my home group was the KIS group. And I did call my sponsor in Sonoma County before I come up here, and she said, he gave me some really good advice, options. She said, Freeman, I'm going to share tonight, and what I'd like to see you do is don't drink all day. So I said, hey, now with that, I stayed sober all day, so that's pretty cool. Anyway, so to start this thing off a little bit like how it was and what happened and what it is like now, it's going to be short cut because my wife's here, so you won't hear my wild stories about all that. We didn't have any anyway, but I dreamed I did. You know, I always thought I was loved by women and served by men, but I found out I was just dreaming. It tells you in the big book that we can't tell the truth from the false, you know, from fantasy from reality, so sometimes I have a little trouble. And all I do is I get down the road and she'll just say, hey, Freeman, huh? Like, okay, thank you. Wake me up. Bring me back down. Anyway, you know, I didn't start off just being a drunk. You know, I started off, you know, as a young kid trying to figure out what life was about. And I didn't really get a good start in life because I wound up drinking at about 13. So my educational thing got in the way. You know, I couldn't really get too far there, so I cut that one out. They wouldn't let me drink at school. I was thinking, trying to figure out ways to get booze, you know, to school. So I just lost it around 10th grade. They put me, they wanted to put me back in 9th grade, and being an alcoholic with ego problems and all that, you know, ego gets in the way. I didn't want to see all these 9th graders, you know, and be in the same grade with them. And I just said, you know, I'm too good for this. So I quit. You know, I quit. And I quit a lot of things in my life I couldn't do because alcohol got in my way. You know, alcohol it's a good dissolvent. You know, it dissolves houses, families, wives, kids. It'll dissolve everything. I always thought no kitchen should be without that, you know, because you can dissolve the stuff that got in your way. But it's a serious business. They're shooting little bullets out there. You know, there's a lot of pain involved. And I usually like to joke around a little bit when I get up here because, you know, or not up here, but when I'm speaking at a regular meeting, I joke around. I don't think people take me too serious sometimes, but it's because I joke around. It's because I was in pain for a long time. I was in a lot of pain for a long time. I wasn't a happy camper out there. You know, I wasn't out there drinking and just one day decided I'm going to come here on a winning note. No, I wasn't winning. As you know, I said I quit school. So I couldn't, you know, I didn't have no education. I didn't have no job skills. So, you know, I was that labor guy. If you wanted to hire some guy to plant grapes, I picked prunes for 6 years. I didn't, you know, to earn clothes. So my dad was an alcoholic. So he wasn't, I didn't know how to work. I worked 17 years for my mom's boarding house until my dad lost that. He quit drinking and became a gambler. He changed seats on the Titanic. You know, and he lost a lot of stuff there doing that. And that was kind of hard. It was hard on my mom. She wasn't an alcoholic. She didn't drink. She was a normal drinker. And I married a normal drinker. They're weird. Beautiful people, but don't watch them drink. It drives them nuts, you know. You get a normal person, man. I mean, I tell this all the time. But get the bottle out. Get a bottle of wine, for Christ's sake. Take the cork. You know, I have a cork to fill a flip tab, but that's the way I drink. But anyway, you know, take the cork out. Chill the glass. Fill the glass. Put the bottle. I'm nuts already. I'm just going crazy over there, you know. And he put the bottle away. Then go sit down and say, oh, maybe I want some lollies or some crackers. Jesus, spit the cord out. Drink the shit. Save the glass. Come on. Hop around. Nope. Don't have to. Don't have to do that. Alcoholics were different. When I first got drunk, my first drink, I believe, you know, like they say, I wasn't an alcoholic. I wasn't born an alcoholic, but when I took my first drink, an alcoholic was born. But I blacked out, I passed out, I got sick, I heaved up, I couldn't remember what the hell we did. But it must have been fun, because the next day I wanted to do it again. Two other guys I was with, four normal bastards, they didn't want to. They didn't want to. Oh no, they had enough. But Freeman, he found something there. He found something. you know, that jigsaw puzzle that was totally missing something, found it, the last piece, and oh boy, was I somebody. I was 6 foot. I know I don't look that tall right now, but, you know, give me a couple of drinks. I'm 6 foot tall. I'm handsome, I'm strong, I'm debonair, I'm all that stuff. And then, unfortunately, if you drink long enough, you'll realize that alcohol, whatever it gives you, what little it gives you, it'll take away. And it'll take away a little more. You know, it's not uncommon to hear an alcoholic say, you know, my ex-wife or my ex-wives, you know, because it happens. It happens because you just can't be there. I was never there where I was supposed to be. I couldn't keep my butt and my mind in the same place at the same time. And that's what you have to do here. If you want to hear anything tonight, you got to keep your butt and your mind in the same place. My butt was in the chair. My mind was out the window. I could tell you how many birds were outside. I could tell you all that stuff. I can tell you all that, because my mind was always wandering somewhere. If not, I was saving the world, you know, saving people from this. And I was a hero, man, in my own mind. Legend in my own mind, as they say. That alcohol, family, it just, you know, it kept going. And I never did get a job when I was young, so I was having trouble. I heard some guy, I love that they put labels on your road. And one time I was you got a level 5, a level 1. One time you got a class A, a class B. I don't give a hell what the hell you label it. It was hell. You know, it was hell. When you go outside with $2 in your pocket and try to go on a $40 drunk, that's hard. Now, some of you people may not understand that because you're younger. I was at the convention center here a while back, the Big Boy Toys it was called, and I was there, and this guy ordered 2 beers. And man, when he got the bill, he was, you know, it was $8.50. He got a buck and a half out of $10. Holy shit, I said, I'm glad I quit drinking. I could have never afforded a beer, you know? And when I'm talking when it goes $2 on a $40 drink, I'm talking back when booze was cheap. You know, you can get a quart of wine for a 97 cents or 5 cents tax. It was, you know, $1.03. And now, you know, it's way up there. So you guys might want to say, well, I'm leaving the house with $20 going on a $100 drunk. But it don't matter. Alcohol, it destroys everything that it touches for an alcoholic anyway. Not for normal people. That's fine. You know, they can relax and do whatever, but for me, it just kept me down. And I just said I started off in the mud and stayed there, just walled around there. When he said I hit my bottom, I guess they have a saying, and some people don't understand it. You show an alcoholic a rut, he will move in and furnish it. And that's what I was doing, you know, down at the bar. But it kind of hung out there, and I thought, this is my life. This is all I deserve. This is my lot in life. This is the way I'm going to go through life. And my dad told me, you know, I was going to die, you know, drunk driving more. Like, we used to have this great big old bomb carrier, they called it, 1947 Dodge four by four type deal. Huge, probably a ton and a half or something. He goes, you know, Freeman, when you go out, you need to drive that. You should buy that for me and you drive that. So I could make it home. I just run over everything, you know, because I had cars that, you know, they had, you know, just to break the good, they'll stop on anything, you know. They'll stop on a tree, a telephone pole, a rock. I've hit everything in Sonoma County. And I always had this imaginary driver that would get out and run away, and I'd tell the policeman, he went that way. You know, one time, you know, you just get out and you fall down and say, well, the doors were all locked. I was, you know, sitting on the freeway with a car. It looked like it was in good shape. I looked at the hood. It was nice and smooth. But I was going like 70 miles an hour down the main road. And I should have went over to 101 and Highway 12 in Santa Rosa, the overpass. And I was oblivious. I remember waking up, walking. Somebody was walking me up and down the road saying, are you okay? You all right? First thing out of my mouth, I wasn't driving. You know, I wasn't driving, you know, and I got caught. Well, they framed me on that one because they said I was driving. Actually, I couldn't tell you who the hell was driving. I was the only one in the car when I left home. But it looked smooth, man. The hood was all cool and everything. I said, damn, I didn't wreck it very bad. I'm okay, right? That's pretty cool because it was my mom's car, you know. It was a station wagon, a 73 Ford Esquire or whatever the hell it was. And then I looked down and the front tire was sitting up at the firewall. I'm going, oh, shit, something's wrong with that. Anyway, you know, but that's the way cars were for me. I just kept wrecking them and all that. And what I like about my friends, after you wreck all your cars, you go to jail 10 days, 20 days, 4 days, 5 days. You know, you're doing life on an installment plan. Your wife's gone, kids gone, you know, all this crap. And then your friend comes over to your house and he says, why don't you have a beer? You know, why? You weren't that bad? Oh, my God. How can they be your friend and they don't know all that stuff you've been through and all the stuff you lost? And they don't know the pain, man. Alcoholism is a lonely disease. Even in a crowd, even in a room like this right here, you could be lonely. And people don't understand. You think nobody understands you. You know, but, you know, there's hope. And that'd be tonight's Christmas. So Merry Christmas to one and all. And if I said anything, if I could give you anything, I'd give you a gift. It'd be the gift of sobriety. I can't give it to you. I could offer it to you, but you'd have to pick it up and take it. It's one of those gifts that someone can give you, but you gotta take it first. If you reject it, it won't happen. I hear a lot of people say, hey, it don't work. And they're right, it won't work. If you don't work it, it don't work. But if you do what it says, it tells you, chapter 5, probably, I didn't read it in this particular meeting, that's part of chapter 3, but rarely have I seen a person fail who is thoroughly called up at. When I pulled it down, there was a line I didn't recognize until I was sober for a few 24 hours. And I couldn't believe they wrote that. It says, we made in you to be thorough from the very start. And I'm wondering, what the heck? These guys are begging me. They don't even know me. I never seen them. But then I realized, because I got sober 6 years, I got drunk one night. My wife really liked that. She just slammed me in the shower. That was the end of it. Never said another word about it. Special woman. And that went on for another 3 years. I got drunk again. But this time, I got serious. This time I got down like 6 months or 9 months. And I knew, I thought it was going to kill me. I didn't think there was no way out. And I wasn't with my wife because, who's going to move out, you or me? I said, you can go. I love that woman. But I tell you what, when it comes to alcohol, you can't make a good decision. And it's not a lack of loving, it's not knowing how to love. And when you're in the grip of a progressive disease, and I don't know why nobody tells you this shit, it should be right on the label. You pick up a pack of cigarettes, you got a warning. You pick up all this other stuff, I don't care if it's Kool-Aid, look under that warning. And I love the hot chocolate when you make it, and watch it, it may be hot when you take it out of the microwave. How come alcohol has nothing on there? It doesn't say, hey, you're in the grip of a progressive disease, if you talk about this other stuff they advertise for 4 hours, guess what? If you pick this up and you can't stop after 4 days, come on, call the doctor, do something, And I love that picture they have of the two guys talking, I guess it was Bill W. Dr. Bob talking to, or maybe it was Bill W. and Hatcher talking to probably Dr. Bob, I'm thinking. I'm not sure, but I'm sure Bill Hatcher will tell you. He'll clear it up later for me. And what I like about it, the guy, he's been drinking so much and he nearly dies. He goes to the hospital, he gets sober, he gets out, he gets drunk, he's having all this physical and trouble again, and he goes back to the hospital, and he's afraid to leave. I don't know if he's in an asylum or where the hell yet, but he is afraid to leave because he don't trust himself. He will get drunk and die. And the two guys come in here and they go, what are you doing here? And the one guy, I love this line, man, because he says, I come to give you a treatment for alcoholism. See, there was no treatment in alcoholism in 35 back in those days. I started in 35 when I got to meeting for him. But that's what he was telling them. They brought him a treatment, and apparently it worked. Yeah, it's sober, I do believe. And I'm not too good of a historian, so I won't go there. But anyway, I don't want to leave you with the fact that I got drunk all this time and stayed in the muck and the mire, but that's where I was for a long time. And even when I was had some kind of mental pictures of seeing this one guy that used to come home from work and pick up his newspaper and walk in the house and, pet the dog and go in the house. And he even had a white fence to do that. I don't know what he was thinking. But, it's like I would see him from the other side. I'd be outside on the lawn a summer day trying to put a sheet down, put a sprinkler over top of that, just sweating. Man, I was hot. I was miserable. I was hungover. And if I wasn't hungover, I was half drunk. And I'd see this guy, and I'm wondering, why? Why can't I be like him? I'd have those moments, man. I wanted something better for myself. I wanted something better at that time for my ex-wife, but for the wife and the kids. I wanted something better, and I could not get it. Why? Because I was in the grip of a progressive disease. I had a mental obsession coupled with a physical compulsion. And they didn't tell me that on the bottle. The bartender never told me. Nobody told me this stuff. Sometimes you get yourself in some pretty good situations. I broke into a store when I was probably 13, drinking, trying to get some booze. And I had a friend of mine that he passed away at 55 from alcoholism. He was the driver for his getaway car. He was the driver. He was older. And another young friend of mine around my age, we broke into the store. The two of us, the other guy was in the car. Next thing I know, a highway patrolman comes around the back of the store and fires off a warning shot, and we're scattering. Well, the smart guy ran in front of the store and went that way, and I just went straight across to the pair of orchards, straight across. Country boy that I was, lived out in the boonies in the country, so I flew to that pair of orchards, and I'm running, man, and he's shooting three times at me. And he said in the paper, I shot 3 times at the youth running. I was 13 years old. I'm sure if I was 13, he may not have shot at me. Maybe. Maybe he would have. You know, I don't know. But that could have all ended before it started. I got a bunch of kids that would say, huh? Yeah, they wouldn't be here. But, you know, that's the kind of situation you get. But then to run forward a little bit, sober, right here in Visalia, I had a highway patrolman, or ex-highway patrolman, at my house. And we were going to read the book, but we just got into talking first, getting to know each other a little bit. And he didn't even pull a knife or nothing on me. You know, you talk about progress and not perfection. That was pretty damn good, I thought. You know, and it was awesome, man, because we had a good conversation, and I didn't say nothing about them. When I was drinking, I would always talk about their mothers, their fathers, their wives. I didn't know them. You know, they'll say, any wife, word, come, bed, boots, all that. I mean, I would say all this crap, and they'd handcuff me, drag my butt off to jail, no matter what, you know. And sober, though, the people that I meet, you know, I met a guy recently, and I don't want to talk about him because, you know, he drinks gin. He used to drink gin and stuff like that. Scotch. Who the hell drinks that shit? Play golf, man. What the hell? I don't hang around with guys. Like, give me some port. You know, give me some damn wine. Anyway, he told me that he had a story here the other day that bothered me because I knew I was going to speak on Christmas night. He says, yeah, he was shot down in a helicopter. I thought, man, that teed me off. Holy shit, but it's not a who did what story. But I'll tell you what, in fifth grade I got shot down by Connie Kincaid, and that just about killed me right there. That's all the shot down I got. And it never got no better than that either. And that, you know, you get that thing where you're afraid to ask people stuff because you... He's sitting here in a chair here, but I won't mention his name. But anyway, that's awesome stuff because, you know, we don't know each other from Adam. We were out there talking about an old truck one day, and we just became friends. We just became friends. We could just talk. It's like we're in two different lifestyles. You know, he's in one level and I'm the other. I'm either the A and he's the B, or I'm the 1 and he's the 5. I don't know. But I know we normally wouldn't mix. We'd have been rolling on the ground a couple of drinks. But I'll tell you what, we got to know each other. It's pretty awesome to be able to talk to each other and joke each other when we, you know, football, something, we text things back and forth. Usually not pleasant. Anyway, but that's what being sober does for you. You can do that stuff with other people. You can have a relationship. But when you're drinking, you really can't have a relationship with another human being. It's really hard because and even sober, it tells you, for you old-timers out there, if you're reading page 86, I don't know what it tells you, but it tells me that when I leave the house, I got to ask it to be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motive. Now, why is it telling me that? And it don't matter what level you have. If you're a year sober, if you're 100 years sober, it says the same damn thing. So we must have a lot of problems in that department, I would say. For that little dishonest, self-seeking, self-motivated, whatever, self-centeredness. Oh, we're a lovely bunch. But Alcoholics Anonymous did do this for me. I drank in the park and I drank wine. I drank lower on the shelf than most people. And I never thought chapter 3 ever applied to me because I never tried to switch some scotch to brandy. What the hell are they talking about? But I was getting bloody noses and I was drinking dark for $1.05 a fifth, man. Couldn't beat that. And you're an unemployed boy, might have told you that. It couldn't work, no education. So this is what I'm drinking. And then I decided, when I'm getting all these bloody noses, I'm going to switch to white port. I switched to white port so I wouldn't get a bloody nose. Take longer to change colors, wouldn't it? Made sense to me. I mean, so, you know, maybe it did apply, maybe it don't. But we try all kinds of things. I tried quitting a lot of different times, but Alcoholics Anonymous is the only thing that ever worked. And a God of your understanding is awesome because I can't get sober with your God. I don't know what kind of, you know, higher power. But I think, too, if the word God scares you, then alcoholism scares you enough. I was done. When I was here, I was done. I told you I went out twice, but I'll tell you what. I didn't screw around. When I went one night, I was back in AA. When I got to the end of that 7 months, I was back in AA. I never drank and went to AA. I never screwed around like that. I always knew. I was done. I was done, but the disease raised up and it'll get you. It's cunning, baffling, powerful. Now, you want to know the first thing that gets wrong when you get sober is your ego. You don't want to think that, but guess what? It's true. You get a host of friends or somebody, you walk in here, and you can... I don't want to do it, but I could do it, I'm sure, because I know damn well exactly what it feels like. That movie with Randall Washington, where he was drinking and all that stuff, and then he's all down and out, and then he gets all spruced up, he's fascinating, man, he's the man, comics will do much, right? Now, you know what I mean, all that jazz. And no matter where you're at in life, we get that feeling. That's that stupid ego stuff, you know? And it's awesome. You have to get rid of that sucker, it'll kill you. you know, I wrote a poem about it. I shared it at Bridgeford. I won't share it here. It's too big of a meeting for that. But it's the first thing that gets wild. We have to keep coming. And why do we keep coming back? You know, I see people at the meeting. I say, man, this guy's been around 32 years. What the hell is he doing here? You know, but he's giving back a little bit of what he got so freely. And that's why I like to read something out of the book. I got to read it. Because if I don't do it, then I'm going to trick myself. And then I can't call my sponsor and tell him, yeah, I read it. Because he reads it. And it's on, most of you already know my stuff, so you know it's on page 52 down here. It says we were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were afraid of misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. That was me walling around down there in the mud, huh? We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of really help to other people. Hold on a little further with that one. But, and then they got the antidote to that thing. That's the way we come in here. Then over here on page 84, but it's kind of amazing in 84, I think around step 9, when you start giving stuff back, then you get that feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We'll intuitively know how to handle situations we used to baffle us. We'll suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. So when you see that God's doing for us what we can do for ourselves, I had something there that just walked right out the door. So I was going to give this book away to one of the newcomers from Jesse, because I don't know if they have one or don't have one. I'll just take it out and hang the numbers in. So, anyway, before God, right court, red court, in the wino park, going to jail, being handcuffed, being shot at by highway patrolmen, getting into trouble, ex-wives, kids that are that don't understand what the hell is going on. They want to go play baseball, and their dad can't go take them because he's MIA, I like to say. He's just missing in action. He's gone somewhere. You know, I got a daughter. She's 45 years old. I can say her age, because you ain't going to meet her probably. And otherwise, she'd slap me. She's in Sonoma County, and she's playing ball. For 20-something years, she's been playing ball, you know, because her dad didn't do it for her. She did it herself, and she's still playing ball. Now, the young kids are running around the base quicker than her, but hey, she's still playing ball. And when she hears a loud noise and hears somebody screaming or wanting to argue, she wants to look... who wants to bury herself under the table. This is what I did for my child. This is what drinking does. This is what happens when you come home. The way I started drinking while I was having, you know, kids and skipping rocks and having fun and kicking the can. None of you guys don't know that game, but come on. I'm not that old. You know, just having fun, shooting BB guns, or whatever. You're drinking beer out there, you're having a little fun. This is the way it starts. And remember, it's progressive. The progressive, I think they read it in chapter 3, never gets better, it only gets worse. So what happens? I come home, I kick in the back door, I throw a chair through the window. I have young kids in the house. This is what alcohol did to me. I did not want to be that way. I wanted to be like that man that came home, picked up the paper, petted the dog, and went in the house. But no, I wasn't for me. I was the other guy. I did not want to be that way. It hurt inside. I didn't know I had an inside. I didn't know I had any of that stuff. The other day we're at a meeting, a young lady was talking. She's sitting here tonight, I won't mention her name. But she almost cried. And she even said she loved us. And now I knew what the hell was going on because I'd seen it before. You start feeling. You come in, you take the booze out, and you start doing stuff for other people. You work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You read the book. You get a sponsor. You do all these things to tell you. Then you find out you start feeling. Then there's the macho guy that was sitting over there with the tattoos and, oh, hell, that's hard, blah, blah, blah. Crying like a little baby one day. What happened? He started feeling with his heart instead of thinking with his head. Sometimes we had to get to, they used to call it the 18-inch drop. If you measure somebody's head from the forehead down to their heart, it might be that. Some people call it the 12-inch drop. Whatever, that's what it means. It drops from here to here. And it's hard. And I have my wife here. She'll know around 3 o'clock I'm an SOB. You know, I just told her the other day, I'm thinking my meditation time at 5 in the morning is going to have to get jacked up. Maybe do it at 5 and then do another portion about 1 in the afternoon. Maybe I can get past that. You know, but, you know, the beginning of of something is recognizing that it is a problem, and I'm recognizing it is a problem. Because around that time, if I'm tired, I don't get a nap or something, or if it's putting up with your grandkids or whatever, I got a little guy that could really run you wild, you know, his 3-year-old great grandson. And by that time, I'm an animal. I don't want to be that animal. The woman deserves better than that. And the first thing you got to do is recognize it. And that's what happened the other day. I'm recognizing that something's going on at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I used to take a nap at 1, get up at 2:30, so I have a cup of coffee so my grandson would come home. Then you got to go pick him up, then you take him to practice, whatever it was, come back. You got to start thinking about dinner. You got to do this. So I was always gearing myself for something like that. I take him to school. Every day I go to the Bridge Street late because I'm taking my grandson to school. He has free perks. He goes at 7 o'clock. What's that about? That's because I'm sober and I can. I'm sober and I can, and I do it. And I made him a deal. More or less, if you stay in school and you do good, then I'll cook you breakfast and I'll see you get to school. And he's here tonight too. And that's why I do that. And sometimes I don't want to. Every day I gotta get out of bed, I see you getting cereal, and you're riding a bike. But then I get a cup of coffee and meditate a little bit. And you get a little less breakfast than you used to get because I'm getting old. Hey, it's winter break though, I'm off for a while. Anyway, you know, if I can offer anybody anything tonight, being it's Christmas and you know, some people believe it and some don't, but I can't give you the gift of life. I found out one day I was talking about step one, and he was having confusion because the daily reflection was on step 12, and he goes, people were talking about it. I go, you can find step one and step 12 if you just listen. Because, see, you can give the message to some guy and try to carry the message to him, but you're powerless. You can't get him sober. You're powerless. There's your powerless right there. So we're powerless. We're powerless over alcohol, and my wife didn't become unmanageable. My life was unmanageable. And we, you know, and the steps are wonderful. Because first, you know, you got to, you know, you wonder about God. You got, you know, people don't want to, you know, you want an acorn or a doorknob. And, you know, I looked at that scenario when I got here. I thought, well, if I got a doorknob, I don't have to worry about God punishing me or doing anything weird. Because, but then if I wanted some friggin' help, I got into more trouble than an acorn can handle. And a doorknob, I wanted something greater. I wanted something that maybe created the whole damn thing. And I believe in the creation because in step 7 it says our creator. It didn't say our friend or buddy or little, you know, chihuahua. It didn't say nothing about my doorknob. It says our creator. And I need all that stuff. I need all that heavy duty stuff. But if you knew and you wondered what is it's a lot of things to a lot of people. I know some people that are Christians, they want to believe in this and they don't want to believe in anything. It's kind of hard because I'm denying this. I tell them, you know what, Christians go to church every day, but they come to AA to get sober. You know, they pray every day, but they come to AA to get sober. Because there's a reason, because we have a disease. And you can walk in both. You can read the Bible and put your head up there in the clouds with God, but you can read the big book and keep your feet down here in the ground where we're living. You know, right down here on earth. I love people when you talk to them and they're simple. Hey, my wife mentioned the other day, somebody will say something, she'll down to earth. Now, some people are always up, you know. I love chaos. I used to love chaos. If I had to come home and speak to something wrong, I want to stir up something because you're always working on something and you got something to do. Who knows what calm is? My daughter, the one that wants to dive under the chair, she invited me up for Father's Day. She came down here, first of all, picked me up, took me to Santa Rosa, gave me my own room, tossed me the keys to a truck, nice looking truck, full of gas, and says, anything you want to do. That's where you can go to meetings, and then anything you want to do, you just tell me. Yell at me. Say something. You know, be mean to me. Don't treat me nice. Don't show me love, because I don't know how to love. I don't know what the hell that is. It scared the hell out of me. I had such a good time that whole week. That was a beautiful week. I gave him an extra week free. You know, no charge. I stayed for 2 weeks. And I got to go to a meeting almost every day. But it was funny because I told you I drank after 6 years. So I meet a guy that I sponsor. He's got 32 years. And I go, okay, yeah. Just time, son. We got 24 hours. I bet I got up before you because he sleeps late, see? So I got up before him. I was sober longer than him that day. But it was awesome. His name's Angelo. I met some other people. And then what shocked me, you might know if I have kind of gray hair. When I was first got sober, I was in the 80s. It was October 26, 1981. I was 33 years old, so I walked in there. So I'm looking for these old buddies anyway, so I moved down here now. And there was this table with all these old bald-headed guys and shit, and I'm thinking, nah, that can't be it. And I'm looking around, I have this problem. I'm looking for dark-haired young guys, you know. And finally, this guy named Preston, I won't give his last name, he yelled, Hey, Freeman, is that you? And I go, yeah, that's me. What the hell? There was the old man's section. There was my section. There was all my buddies over there. But You know, you get humbled at different times in your life. But Alcoholics Anonymous has, I was saying earlier, you know, what is it? To me, and with this, you know, does it pump heads from Christianity or anything? No. And we're not here about Christianity stuff, but if you're a church goer and you're reading the Bible and you believe in Jesus or whatever you believe in, and you think, well, I have trouble with AA because they say higher power or God, don't worry. Because, see, this program is God-given. And I say that with honesty because I know it, because I lived it. I got drunk. I've seen things happen that tells me. This thing restored me. I love when I came to Victory, when I first got there was a lady there sitting on the couch. And she said, man, I can't see my kids. And I can't see my kids. And she's going to me. She got a cross. She goes to a woman's room. She's doing stuff. And then one day she goes, you know, I get to see my kids. I got one of them armed guards or whatever they call it. A supervised a visit for an hour. And then, you know, you're talking along. And then you hear one day, hey, 4 hours, you know. And then you got to come home. Unsupervised vision, got to spend the night. The last time I talked to her, she was taking the kid to school because he was living with him. That's restoring. That's only God. Only God stores things together. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous does for us. Some of us had to drink, go through the muck and the mire, get down in the mud, the blood, and the beer, so that we could crawl out and find the God of our understanding. Because I don't think we would have found it when we're walking upright, you know, not drinking. I'll refer to a story. I like to say it like this. You're driving down the road in a little convertible. You know, you got a convertible going, you got the music going, and the music's awesome. You got your woman there next to you, or whoever it is. Wife, girlfriend, neighbor's wife, whatever's making you happy at that time. She's right there. And everything's going smooth. You know, and you're not saying nothing about God, you're not thinking about God. You know, the sun's out, and you don't think, I'm the man. Hey, check me out. And then you go around the corner and you have a friggin' blowout. Okay, the wind picks up, the clouds move in, it starts raining, you're sitting there, the woman takes off, and everything, and you're looking there, and the first thing out of your mouth is going to be, oh God, there he comes, now we're going to call on God. Where were you when you're going down and everything's going smooth? Well, you don't need no God today, baby, I'm the man. Well, that's the way we are, and I think that's why we had to go to what we did to get to where we're at, because now we got a God of our understanding, and it's awesome. It's awesome, you know. So anyway, so if you're new here and you're wondering how does this thing work, I know people ask questions sometimes, and they want to know, well, what do? They just go to a room and they hear us talking, and they think, well, oh, okay. So they just sit there and they're laughing, they're having coffee, but I call that the fellowship. We go to a meeting, we're sitting there, and we're having coffee, we're laughing, we're joking about the Cowboys, and you know what happened to them. You know, I say that on because this guy hates the Niners, and I love the Niners. So anyway, so we're laughing and talking, and then they're wondering, well, how do you get sober through all this? Well, you know, you get one-on-one. You ask somebody. You get somebody you think you like or you might understand, and you ask them to sponsor you. And that don't mean they're going to buy you a house and give you a car. It means they're going to take you by the hand. Not by the hand. We're people. But, you know, we're going to sit down and read mono and go through the book, you know, the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So when you start working that first step is just you got to admit there's something wrong. If you never admitted there was anything wrong, you never do anything to fix it. So you got to admit, man, I'm powerless. Well, I was tired, sick and tired of being sick and tired, wanting to be like that man. I couldn't be like that guy. I got up and I started working at a friggin' food bank. I was volunteering my time 8 hours a day, you know, 5 days a week. And a stranger, a total stranger I've never saw in my life, was sitting on the steps one day and he looked at me and said, why don't you try going to a meeting? Why don't you go to an alcoholic meeting? Oh my God, where? I have no shirt that I'm an alcoholic. This man never saw me. But this man was also a member of Alcoholics Anonymous over 13 years. So like little kid, man, pick one, another one, you know, all that jazz. And he knew it. And I went. And then he told me, well, I might be there, but I won't be there for you. So I got to my first meeting with a resentment, ready to kill. Why did he say that? And now I know, you know, he went for himself. It was nice that way, but he went for himself. But we have to come for ourselves. You know, a guy came in the other day, and he said, he didn't last long in the meeting either. I don't know what he said. The girl left. He goes, what do you do here? And he said it kind of cocky. So you got to watch how you say things to me sometime now that I'm sober a little while. I go, well, we make money. The counter put it in the back. And this is my armed guard sitting here. How'd you get past him? He knew what it was. And I knew he knew. I don't know why. I'm not psychic. I just knew he knew. That's why he was there. Outside the door, I said, hey, you know, that's a hint. No, well, I don't need this place, but my girlfriend really needs it. I'm thinking, oh boy, here we go, son. You got a lesson learned. And he's telling her this and that, and she's sitting there, and then she's out the door, and he's out the door, and then she's back in, and then they're gone. They were there 20 minutes. You can't come here for somebody else. You can want somebody to want it, but you got to have the willingness to be willing. You can't give that to nobody. You know, I can't make a gentleman willing to like the Niners or like the Cowboys. I don't have that power, you know. But, you know, when you're willing, things happen. And the only thing that happens is when you're willing to try. And that's what you're doing here. I hope that's why you're here. And if you're in a court card, that's okay. If he sent you, it's all right to be invited by the judge. You know, it's okay. Because when you didn't have him be invited by the judge, you might have thought, well, hey, things are looking good, you know. Anyway, I got sober in Sonoma County, so I can't tell you guys I got drunk here, ran over anything here, got in a fight over here, hooked a jail here, smacked this thing, drank it to pump out, or whatever the hell that is. I hear people talk about it, I know where it is now, I see it, but no, all my stuff was done in Sonoma County. All my little places where I could go by and laugh, yeah, I remember, I hit that tree, yeah, it was all there. But by the grace of God, and you people, I've been able to walk upright for a few years. My grandkids haven't seen me drink. They don't know what I am. They just see this guy sitting there, and he shows up occasionally at their ball games, and he sits on the side sometimes and watches them. I don't know what they think about me. It's not important. I'm here. I'm here for them, not for me. You know, better to comfort than to be comforted. Better to love than to be loved. Better to understand than to be understood. You know. You guys know where that is. That's 99 of the 12 by 12. Whoever wants to look it up. It's awesome stuff. I can't read that. I can't live that guy's life. I'm not that good, but I want to. I want to try. So I've been trying to memorize it little by little. You know, making a channel of peace and, you know, all that stuff. But Alcohol Anonymous, I had an ex-wife. I used to cry and cry and cry. Oh, my God, I want her back. God, what happened? What happened? And I was crying away. One day I was going down the road. I had to pull over and laugh like hell. I laughed like, thank you for not answering that prayer, Lord. I've been married to my wife for 27 years, and I haven't hit her one time. And I wasn't going to say this, but I did, by George. I woke up in my bed today, in bed with my wife. My car parked in the driveway. Well, my car, my grandkids' car, my granddaughter's car, they all use it for you. You know, I came into this program, you know, with a 65 Chevy Impala with no reverse. The other day I was going to meetings every day in a 46 Dodge pickup. What the hell happened? I'm going backwards, but it's all right. You know, because I allowed my grandson to take the car to work, and I can do that because I'm sober. But this is what the program gave me. It gave me a wife that had been together for 27 years. I was with nothing for 27 years prior to that, except in and out of jail. You know, in and out of jail, misunderstood kids and all kinds of crap going on. And who's a friend? Who's a friend when you're drinking? And a good friend came to the door, and I had to hurt his clothes, and I saw him, and I'm shaking like a leaf inside because I've been drinking for 3 or 4 days. I'm hungover, and, you know, I didn't answer the door. I did not answer that door. Today, a cop comes to my door, a policeman, excuse me if there's any cops and policemen in the building. You know, a policeman came to my door, and he was walking away, and I went out to open the door. Hey, don't run off. What's up? What's up, brother? Because I know. After so many 24 hours, you don't got no problems, and you don't worry about it no more. You know, if you get a ticket, it's a ticket. You know, you're not looking in the glove box, under the seat, or actually, mine was closer, but, you know, you weren't looking for that bottle. But, you know, it's awesome. You know, it's awesome to be able to see and watch your kids grow up. It's awesome to watch people in the program come in and then cry a little bit once in a while. It's okay, because they're feeling. So we numbed that thing so much with booze all those years, we couldn't feel nothing, you know. We didn't have an idea of what the heck was going on. You know, when I was out there drinking stuff, I didn't know if I was shooting pool or playing basketball. I had no clue, you know. And I love those one-liners, but I didn't get to use a lot of them today. You know, even a blind dog can find an acorn once in a while. So if you're here and you hear some guy say, well, 1 out of 6 of you give them, don't worry about that guy. Just keep showing up. Get a sponsor, read the book, and you won't have to worry about it, all right? I'm going to close by reading something here, because I think they want to give out chips or do something. Is Chip Knight? Oh, you already did it. Oh, I thought it was the end of the month. I thought it was the last meeting in the month. Ah, you're done. Well, I said I was sober. It's like I remember anything. I'm getting older now. Blueberries out that memory. By the way, I got another miracle happen. My wife had a little surgery on one of her eyes. make it so she'd see better. Now she can see clearer, and she didn't throw me out. I thought for sure she was going to chuck me right there. Anyway, I'd like to read this on page 100 because this is another promise that's not on the other thing. This is a promise. This is for any of you in this room that's going through trouble. I don't care if you're going through abortion, cancer, your kids, or whatever. There's something better. People think it's the end of their life. I had a guy come to me and said, I need my wife back. I need a job. I need this. I need a car. I need all this stuff. You know, the funny thing was I knew him before that. I knew him when he had the wife. He had the car. He had the job. He had the house. And you got drunk. So don't tell me what you need, son. You got to start right here. Right where you're at. Anyway, we're going to read this little thing here on page 100 because I like it and I'm up here. Now, both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands was better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates. I got that feeling too. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. Now I can repeat that last part. No matter what your present circumstances. That means if you came in here and you got all that heartbreak and all that misery, trust me, if you just ask somebody, and if they say no, there's something wrong. Maybe they're too busy. But they can even temporary response to see you get to somebody that you're compatible with. And you just read the book and you do what it is. It sounds like a cliche. Read the book. Read the book. Work the steps. No, it is. And it works. And when the obsession leaves you, that's the miracle. And nobody here knows that had it happened, doesn't know when it happened. That's the miracle of that. And here's the other one. There's an invisible line we all have. We're all drinking and we have this visible line and nobody can see it. That's the problem. God's got he's got a sense of humor. So he put this line out there and he put it invisible so you can't see it. Once you cross over it, you've gone beyond human aid. So don't be asking your neighbor, how am I going to get sober? Because it ain't going to work unless he's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and you can go to church and still go to AA. It's okay. It's all right. One God ain't going to beat up the other God. There's only one God. So anyway, there was two newcomers here. I don't know how to do this. I had a number in my head. And if you need a big book, just pick a number between 1 and 10. And the one that has that number that I pre-examined in my head here, you'll get this big book here. It's the third edition. It's not bad. It's a big print. Not me. I read Bass's and still read it. So we have two newcomers here, right? Will they raise their hands, please? There's one, and there's the other. Okay, you want to pick the number 1 to 10? You need a book. You guys got a book?
I have a book.
You got a book. Then by default, we got a winner, sir, over here. You get a gift. I hope you don't have a big book. That's a big book. You can hit people in the head with this thing. You know, it couldn't be bulletproof for a few pages anyway. And I wanted you to notice that I opened this book earlier and read out of it. So what it tells you is this book works. God bless you. Thank you very much.